Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Ira Lipsius, and I represent Clarendon National Insurance Company in this matter. I think we really come down to two issues before this Court. One is the interpretation of California statute.
Brown, you want to start the clock?
Want me to go on forever?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. One is the interpretation of California statute 11580.1, and whether the State Farm exclusion is valid under 11580.1. And I'll go into that first, unless the Court prefers otherwise. Okay. We have to look carefully at the statute.
I really had trouble seeing why this wasn't just a simple exclusion applicable to the case. As long as they're not using the bus or van or whatever it is to take passengers for hire, it's covered. When they are, it's not. And someone who borrows it gets the same policy coverage under the I think they call it the omnibus clause. And the company that borrowed it was using it to take its paying passengers around, even though they don't pay separately for this part of the trip. I don't get what's complicated.
We get into the second issue of whether this was for a charge, but let's get into that issue. It really comes down to the Metz case, Supreme Court case in California, where the Metz court said you can have an exclusion in a policy, you can exclude a class of vehicle, you can't exclude a specific operation of a vehicle. And then there are the other cases from Metz. And basically what they said in the Metz case.
Metz and thinking it was.
Pardon me?
I remember thinking it was distinguishable. Let's see. That fellow had leased his car, and he had a liability policy that excluded cars while rented to others.
Correct. And the court felt in Metz. I'm sorry.
But that's not the problem here.
Well, this is no different. It says here there's two exclusions.
This van wasn't rented to others.
Okay. But the nature of the exclusions not permissible under Metz are those policies that exclude an activity.
I'm not sure that it's that broad. I think it may just be saying you have to have an omnibus clause.
Well, that's not what Metz said. Metz, whether we agree with Metz or not, Metz is very broad, and the cases that go to it.
Let's look at it. It was a little surprising, but let's see. The exclusion covered cars while rented to others.
Rented or leased.
Attempted to exclude a class of permissive users, so it conflicted with 11580.1.
Correct.
Permissive user coverage, that's the omnibus coverage I was talking about. And here, there's no question that the company that was borrowing the van and driving it was a permissive user. But that wasn't why they weren't covered. The reason they weren't covered is that they're driving around passengers for hire. If they had been just using that van to pick up some paper cups and bags of peanuts to hand to the people in the van, then they would have been covered.
But likewise in Metz, it was only while rented to others. If these same people had been using the vehicle and they hadn't rented it out to those people, but they were just using it and borrowing it,
so
they would have been covered.
As long as they're not taking passengers for hire, they're a permissive user and they're covered.
Okay.
Had he been using the van for personal errands and to drop his clothes off at the dry cleaners and got involved in an accident, then there would be coverage, would there not?
There would be. And that's the same thing with Metz. Let's take the rented car, the other one, loan to customers.
That is Metz.
I mean, the problem, Mr. Lipsius, you made the same argument to Judge Morrow, and I'm looking at her opinion, the excerpts of Record 26, which is page 13 of the court's opinion, and she saw the distinguishing feature the same way that I do, which is that there's a difference between the status of the driver versus the use of the vehicle. And the problem you've got is that at the time this injury occurred, the vehicle was being used to carry passengers for hire.
But in Metz, they looked at it the same way. They took other exclusions.
No.
Loan to customers was held invalid in Republic Indemnity. It said you look at what's happening at the time. Is it a spigot?
I see Metz, though, as, and maybe you can help me with my reading of Metz, but I see Metz the same way Judge Morrow did, and that is that what we're doing is looking at the status of who's operating the vehicle, right?
That's not what Metz said, because it comes down to that, but that was not the exclusion in Metz. Let's take the first exclusion here in this policy, while rented or leased to others, okay? So you're now looking at the status of the vehicle. You're not looking at who's driving it, the same way we're not looking at who's driving it here.
Well,
it's while it's a rented vehicle or in Republic indemnity, while loaned to person. If I loaned it.
Exclusion may not be worded to exclude coverage for permissive users. So the driver here was clearly a permissive user within the meaning of Metz. And if the accident had occurred, if he'd run into somebody while he was dropping the clothing off, then under Metz he would have been covered. But he got into difficulty here because he converted the use of the vehicle from personal errands to carrying passengers for hire.
And in Metz they converted it to be rented to others. That is, if you look at the court...
I don't actually see why they're even related. For example, you have a liability policy.
Correct.
You're covered driving your car that's listed in the policy. No problem at all. You carpool, and your carpool buddies share the gas expense. You're still covered because there's an exception to the exclusion.
Correct.
And then you decide that instead of carpooling, I'm just going to stop at the corner where people are waiting for the bus and ask if any of them want to pay $10 for a ride into town. You're not covered when you drive them into town for $10. It has nothing to do with the permissive user clause.
And if I can
now,
brief,
now Transportation Connection was covered. Under the statute, the policy had to cover permissive users. It did. They were a permissive user. They're covered. That takes care of Metz. Metz comes, goes, it's fully satisfied because Transportation Connection is covered. The only problem comes when and if they carry passengers for hire. They're still covered except for while they're carrying passengers for hire.
So Metz
while clause sorry? Takes them out during that use of the otherwise covered vehicle.
So Metz has directly addressed that, and I'll quote from Metz if the court would like one.
Okay, what page? I'm looking at it.
Okay, Metz 513 Pacific 2nd 927.
Okay.
And the paragraph that begins, the exclusion of automobiles while rented to others in the instant case parallels the exclusion of loan to customers held invalid in the Republic indemnity case. In Republic indemnity, I'm sorry. In both cases, this policy spoke superficially of excluding only a class of automobiles, which is exactly what we're talking about here, where superficially it looks like we're only excluding a class of automobiles, meaning that's being used while someone is paying bulk use to carry a person for charge. But in both cases, the definitive characteristic of the excluded class of vehicles lies in the fact that they are being operated by a class of permissive users. Hence, in practical effect, the exclusion denies coverage to this class of permissive users.
My initial look at that is that it says nothing that helps you. What am I missing?
Okay. The court, let's look at Metz. And,
well, there is an exclusion in the policy that says, well, it's rented or leased to others. But that's not the exclusion that was relied upon.
That's correct. But what is the concept of Metz? And it's a difficult concept to understand. Why should a vehicle be excluded under the statute if it's rented to someone? Why is that a exclusion of permissive users? And let's take the simple case. I rent my car to you, and then I'm driving it because you pay rent. And I'm driving my own car. So therefore, no coverage while vehicle rent, and it's not excluding a group of permissive users. But that's what Metz says. In effect, I'm excluding permissive users. And what is the difference if it's rented to others, if it's used to carry persons for a charge? It's the spigot effect. No, that's what Metz says.
You can read Metz that far. I think what Metz is saying is that, going back to my status of the driver, that's the distinguishing feature, but that it's perfectly acceptable, and I would think commercially reasonable for an insurance company to say, look, it's one thing to underwrite a risk for somebody who is using the vehicle to run personal errands. It's an entirely different risk to accept the responsibility of carrying people for hire.
But it's also a different risk to insure someone who's running a rental car operation on a personal automobile. That's what that said.
Do you get the idea you're not getting this fire started on this issue?
I believe I'm having a hard time with this court at this point.
You might want to go to the next issue.
Okay, very good. I will, Your Honors. But I believe a careful reading of Metz is the idea of a spigot.
We understand your argument. Okay. I guess
you're not buying it.
Well, we'll look at it again with that argument in mind.
Okay. Now the other issue comes, and that is there are cases in other jurisdictions, and there's very old cases in Florida and California. Sorry about that. Could have said Michigan, then we really get us confused.
Warm places New Yorkers go. We could just
Well, I'm not a New Yorker by birth, but adopted the place. Anyway, the other question is, and I think it's just looking at the exclusion itself, and I think it says used to carry persons for a charge. This is part of a big operation, and there are cases in California, and I've cited them, and I could go over them here for the court and repeat them, but they are in the brief, where they said there has to be a specific charge for use of the vehicle. They paid for this grand tour, and it wasn't the bus that was taking them on the tour. This was a pickup. This was not used technically, and we have to look at language very narrowly, because there's an exclusion. Any possible interpretation that's a valid interpretation, not even an ambiguity, if there are two valid interpretations, one expanding coverage, one limiting coverage, the court has to look to the expanding coverage. If you would ask a layperson.
Suppose that you were to prevail on this. Does this mean that we would have a jury trial on whether the passengers paid for the pickup or whether the pickup was free?
Now, they've admitted, if you look in their statement of facts on from State Farm, they've admitted that there was no extra charge for this.
Well, it's a little ambiguous, and I think that's what you've got going for you, is that it's a little ambiguous. But what I'm trying to plumb here is it a genuine issue of fact, or is it just a somewhat more difficult to resolve issue of law? If it's an issue of fact, then you would have a jury decide whether it was a free pickup or whether it was pickup for a charge because it was embraced within the general tour charge. And if it's an issue of law, then we would decide whether I think there was one thing on the net saying it was included and another thing saying it was free, and we would decide whether that amounts to a pickup at your hotel for a charge or a free pickup.
I think careful review of the record and even the statement by State Farm says there was no extra charge for this pickup. There was no extra charge. It goes to the $91 and the 8%.
Pay the same amount for the tour whether you get the pickup or not. But that's on correct. The other hand, unless you commit yourself to the tour, you don't get picked up.
Or you can come to their terminal, theoretically.
You can't call them and get a free ride to the terminal where you look things over and decide what to do.
That is correct, but once you've decided to do it.
Isn't that because if with groups of eight or more, you're getting an extra $80 to cover gas, the wages of the driver, and indeed the insurance?
Well, it really says is the following hotels we include automatically with free pickup, and any other hotel that's not on the list.
We're not going to charge a group of eight because we're already making $80, and that ought to be enough to pay for gas from Sylmar to Santa Monica.
Yeah. Well, it's included within the charge, but there's no specific payment. I'd like to, in the minute and 49 seconds I have left, I do apologize. I'd like to look over just one argument. It was challenged, the question of whether it's an and or an or under 1A and B. And I think it just look at, it says A and B, and this is a question of interpretation of the words. But if you look under B, where there's B has 1, 2, and then C has 1, 2, 3, and 4, there they use the or. So to state that it should be that and is not a decent interpretation is incorrect, because when they wanted to use or, they used or. And therefore, I submit that if one looks at the language of this exclusion, the and is the only reasonable explanation that it includes all of these. It has to be rented or leased to others and used to carry persons, because just on the pure use of the use and, they said, well, the period says there's no and, but if you look at the next paragraph, they use or, so they definitely know how to use the or. Last thing is, I just want to say, is Knopf. The Knopf case is cited by the judge. It is totally irrelevant because it doesn't get into the 11580 issue at all, and the reason was very simply that was not an owner's policy governed by 11580. And that's the reason that the Knopf decision does not apply. I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Barry Levy on behalf of State Farm. There isn't much that has been discussed this morning that really has not been addressed in Judge Morrow's opinion or in our briefs.
Could you speak a little more to whether it was for free?
Absolutely. And in fact, Your Honor, if I could be so bold, if you have your blue stickies, I'm ready. And let me try to guide you through at least where I think you'll find them come in handy. In the ER, page 249, this is the deposition of Mr. Bergen, who's the owner of Transportation Connection, and this deposition was taken by Clarendon's counsel. On that page 248, you notice this is the depositions where there's four pages to a page. So I'll try to actually give you the specific page and the lines.
Frankly, it was so thick I couldn't carry it all. So just read okay. It out loud.
Okay.
Read the good stuff.
If you look at ER 248, in page 8, meaning the deposition page itself, it's in the lower right-hand corner, lines 8 to 22, basically what you have is the testimony that Transportation Connection is a charter party bus company. Then you move to page 249 of the ER and to depo page 9, lines 8 to 12, and there you find this question. What type of company is Transportation Connection, Inc.? The answer, it's a transportation company. Question, what do you transport? Answer, people. So Transportation Connection is a transportation company. It transports people. Then we go to, on that same ER page, depo page 11, and again, Mr. Bergen testifies that it's a tours and charters company. Then we get significantly to page 254 of the ER. And if you go to the depo page 29 and look at lines 14 to 19, you will see there Mr. Bergen's testimony that Katie Snyder, was the underlying plaintiff, her payment included trip to and from Universal Studios ticket, the entrance fee, and whatever fuel charges and taxes. And then on that same ER page 254, look at depo page 30, lines 4 to 7, in which he testifies that the price included the trip to and from Universal Studios. The price of the ticket includes the cost to and from Universal Studios. And then that same depo page from lines 10 to 11.
You understand the critical thing is whether she paid for the trip from the hotel.
And this all comes together when we go to ER page 265, and he explains that what the cost of the ticket for Universal sells it for $60. He gets a 10% break on that, so the company gets that ticket for $54. That's the component for the Universal ticket. And on that, he testifies, and this is on ER 265 at depo page 75, and he testifies that you add on to that ticket price. He adds on to that ticket price for her the round-trip transportation and the fuel and the PUC. So his own testimony is the cost that the customer pays is a part of that is the ticket to Universal, and part of it is the transportation, the round-trip transportation.
You happen to have a case, this sort of thing is not uncommon, where you have tourist destinations.
Right.
You go scuba diving in Hawaii, they may give you a free trip to that bay where you go, or snorkeling, I guess. Right. The free trip is a common thing at tourism places where because people may not rent cars. And I would think that this must come up from time to time, whether they're just charging you for the studio tour or the snorkeling or whatever it is. And I don't happen to have noticed a case that was like this.
No, I haven't seen a case in this kind of precise factual situation. But there's no question. I mean, his own testimony is that the cost that he charged Ms. Snyder, part of it was the fee for the entrance, and part of it was for the round-trip transportation. That's why it's not surprising.
Well, actually, he didn't charge her a cost. He charged her a price.
Well, he charged her
and
more.
And then after that, we're into a cost accounting exercise, right?
Well, he...
True?
Yes, he...
We have to allocate the cost to certain things, right?
Right.
And
he says that he allocated
well,
it.
Well, stay with me here.
I'm sorry.
If she chose to find her own way to the terminal, would the price have been any different?
No, because his business was not selling tickets to Universal. As he said, and I quoted to you already from his deposition, his business was the transportation of people. So in developing his costs, as his testimony says, I look at what I had to pay for the ticket. And on top of that, I add a factor for the round-trip transportation. And on top of that...
From where to where? From the terminal to the tourist destination?
No, he picks them up, he takes them to the terminal, and then he takes them back to their hotel. And perhaps that's why it's not surprising that in Clarendon's own statement of uncontroverted facts, in paragraph 27, they say the total fee for each passenger in Ms. Snyder's party was $101.
Could you get back to Judge Lawson's question?
Yes.
Would she have gotten something off? Had she said, no, I don't need the ride. I'm going to be shopping right across the street. I'll just walk across the street in time for my tour.
No, there's absolutely nothing in this record.
Why isn't it free then?
Excuse me?
Why isn't it free transportation then rather than for a charge?
Or at least complimentary.
It's not. Well, because it's not complimentary. He says he put that statement in the website so that he wouldn't have disputes with people. But in his deposition, he says over and over and over again that the cost of the ticket that he sells to his customer includes the round-trip transportation.
And if the customer doesn't avail him or herself, then it's a windfall to him.
It might be.
I mean, not that it makes a difference one way or the other, but it's the way he looks at it, in other words.
There's not any suggestion in any of his deposition or affidavits or anything that there's ever a situation where his clients are not availing themselves of the transportation because, as he said, as I read from his deposition, what his company does, it provides transportation.
We get that part.
Yeah.
But I guess the question then is, are we required to look at things from his point of view, or should we look at it from the point of view of the public or the customer? If the customer says it's complimentary, they're not going to charge me anything more, I might as well go ahead and take the van rather than find my way over there. The customer looks like it's a free ride. But if he says, well, I'm counting on the fact that everybody's going to take advantage of that, so I'm going to account for it in my cost and therefore price it accordingly, then it's not a free ride. So I guess it depends on from whose view you look at it, right?
I don't think necessarily so, Your Honor, because what you look at is, was there a charge for carrying this passenger?
Yeah.
And the fact is, based on the, in this particular situation with this party, with the Snyder party, there was absolutely a charge for the round-trip transportation. And he admits there was a charge. They're uncontroverted.
Why is there absolutely a charge when they don't pay more for getting the ride and they don't pay less if they forego the ride? I mean, they could very well have had a couple of rent-a-cars and say, no, we don't want you to pick us up at the hotel. We don't want to be standing around waiting. We'll just get in our car and drive down the transportation connection. You have parking there? Yeah.
So then you're saying...
If they don't pay more for getting the ride and they don't pay less if they don't get the ride, why is there a charge?
You're saying that somebody would go to this company and pay $101 to get a $60 ticket to Universal.
Look, I drop off my car at the place that services my car, and usually they give me a ride to work if I do it on a weekday morning. And they tell me, we'll give you a ride back. And I say, no, I'll get somebody in the office to give me a ride back. That way I have more control and I'm not standing around waiting for them. I don't pay for the ride, and they don't subtract anything from the ride. Why isn't it a free ride? Why are they carrying me for hire when they do that?
Carrying for hire has to do with
an insurance risk. If they're making money by driving people around, the insurance company has two additional risks. One is there's more of an incentive to carry people around, and the other is they've got common carrier liability.
In your hypothetical, that might be a free ride because what they're charging that person for, or charging you for in your hypothetical, was for the service to your car.
Why isn't it a free ride here just like the car dealer?
They're selling you here the transportation that they're providing you. That's what their business is. He says, my business is to transport people. Also,
the transportation on the bus starts at the terminal, there's a tour, and then they end up at Universal Studios, right?
No. They pick them up at their hotel. They bring them to the terminal where they pay, okay? Then they take them to Universal, and here they took them back to their hotel.
Okay. So, all right, fine. So somebody, let's say somebody comes from the hotel, gets to the terminal, changes their mind before they pay. Do they get back to the hotel?
I don't know. It's not in this record. There's nothing about that in this record. But also, when you talk about is there a charge, remember, on top of everything else, they added on to this ticket price the PUC and the fuel charges. And these people paid that. And they didn't just charge them the PUC, the 8%.
You know, another way
they
you
added
could,
another 2%.
Another way you could say the same thing is that they calculate their overall price to cover the overhead of giving free rides.
No, I would say they calculate their cost that they sell their service to their customer to cover what their business is, which is the transportation of.
But
that is charging for transportation.
But they represent to the public that it's free, and their explanation is that it's really not free
because we
just don't want to have to put up with the customer complaints.
You may have a truth in advertising problem.
Is that covered under the policy?
But
let me ask you a question. I get your argument on this. I have a slightly different question. Isn't Coachways also a transportation company?
Coachways arranges for tours for people. They contractors. This record is not about them providing.
Why would they buy a policy? I don't know if this makes any difference or not. Why would they buy a policy for a van that's going to be used to carry people that says there's no coverage when it's being used for hire?
Because there's no evidence. That van wasn't used to transport people for Coachways. There's no evidence of that.
It was just used in the business for other purposes?
Used in the business, for all we know.
All right.
I'm wondering, so we have no idea how Coachways makes a living.
Well, I think the record shows Coachways arranges it.
I saw those words, and I didn't know what they meant.
They make arrangements if people from another country, for example, want to get a tour when they come here. But that wasn't this case. They didn't make that arrangement.
I understood that, but I didn't know what it meant. Here's my question, though. I get kind of confused. On the one hand, from the seller's point of view, he's charging enough money to cover the free rides, so they're not really free. On the other hand, from the buyer's point of view, they don't pay extra for the ride from the hotel, and they don't get anything off the price if they forego the ride from the hotel. So from the passenger's point of view, it is free. The policy can be reasonably interpreted to mean that either it's a free ride or it's a ride for hire in that in-between factual circumstance. So why don't you use the doctrine of construing a policy contra pro forentum to resolve ambiguities and resolve it against the insurance company that wrote the policy?
I disagree with the premise that you, the way you worded it.
Tell me each of the things that where the way I laid it out is mistaken.
Well, that the transportation is for free. It's not for free. It's paid. The record here establishes Mr. Bergen's own testimony is he charges for the transportation. He adds the round trip transportation into the cost he charges his client.
So the theme of this case is there's no such thing as a free ride.
That's right. Not when you're a transportation business, because if you were giving free rides, you wouldn't be in business. And you know, why would Mr. Bergen have a $5 million limit policy to cover his transporting people? That's Clarendon policy. Coachways had the State Farm policy is a $250,000 limit policy.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Got it.
You had a few seconds.
I'll get out if you will.
Only 29. I thought I heard 33. I saw that. Okay, I'll have to speak even quicker. Okay. The distinction Mr. Levy fails to make is there are two transportations here, and I think Your Honor, Judge Lawson recognized that. There's a transportation from the terminal, and yes, there is a transportation that's being paid for. The complimentary part was not. That's correct. If they were going to go to Universal, they'd only buy the ticket at Universal. The complimentary part is only from the terminal. The court asked if there's any other cases that address this. And there are a couple of out-of-state cases specifically. They're cited on page 24 and 25 of the appellate brief, where specifically daycare provided transportation, plus we take care of your kids. And there was a car picking up the kids and this exact exclusion, and the court said, no, that's complimentary pickup. Yes, is it included in the price of the daycare? Clearly. And those sites are CSC versus Graves, 293 New Jersey Super 244, and Progressive Gulf Insurance versus We Daycare, 953 Southern Second 250. So they do recognize that there is an issue there where you can give complimentary transportation. Of course it's included in the price. Finally, can I give my one last statement? I appreciate it. Thank you. Coachways, and we specifically raised this argument in our brief and before the lower court, Coachways used this vehicle to transport its customers from the airport, foreign customers for tours from the airport, and therefore, as we said, this policy would be a worthless policy because this was their business. And yes, it was not a specific price for it. They would pick these people up at the airport, take them out, show them around to get them to do tours and Coachway organized tours, and that is in the record. I thank this court very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you, counsel.
Clarendon National is submitted and we adjourn for the day.